We're doing in Yaakov on Gemara Shabbos. We're up to the 8th chapter, the 14th chapter, Shmonas Shratzim, page Kufchet in the Gemara. So we have the following story. Shmuel, who was a disciple of Rebbe's, so he is the first generation of rabbis in the days of the Talmud, what we call Amoraim. So Shmuel, who was also Rebbe's doctor, and he was a top astronomer, he was sitting together with a man named Karna. Shmuel v'Karna. Havu Yatve, they were both sitting, Aguda d'Nahar Malka. They were sitting by the edge of the river named Malka. Chazinu l'maya, they saw the waters, Dikadalu v'achire, that their waters were coming up, and the waters were murky. Amale Shmuel Karna, Shmuel said to Karna, Gavra Rabba Ka'ati Memarava, a great man is approaching from the west, Vechayish Bimei, and he's having stomach trouble along the way here. Vekadalu maya lakbule ape kamei. Ziltaile akankane. The waters are coming up to greet the rabbi that's heading into the port. Do me a favor. Go check out the way when you have a barrel of wine. You want to know if it's good wine or not. You smell on top of the barrel. You smell the wine. So that's what he said. Go smell the barrel. Which was a way of saying go check him out. So he went and he met, who's the rabbi that came to town? Rav. There was a great rabbi in Babylon named Rav. He and Shmuel were contemporaries. So Rav, who was Rabbi Chiya's nephew, who was also a disciple of Rebbe, he had come back to Israel. So, or he had gone out to Babylon. It doesn't tell us where Shmuel was holding, so it must be they were out in Babylon, and this is when Rav went out to Babylon. So no, they were out in Babylon. He says a great man came from the west, so the west is Israel compared to Babylon. So they're standing in Babylon, and he's saying a great man is coming into the port from Israel. Go find out what he's like. Amale. So Karna asks him the following question. How do you know that tefillin, phylacteries, can only be written on the hides of a pure animal? Amalei, he answered him, Dichtiv, the verse says, Lemantiyat v'at Hashem mefiha, the words of Torah must be in your mouth. We understand that to teach me, min hamutar b'ficha, that you could only write the words of Torah in phylacteries or a sefer Torah on a type of animal that's permissible to be eaten. The Torah compares it to your mouth. So it teaches you it's got to be edible, kosher, a kosher animal. Correct. Minayin ledam shu adom. How do we know that blood has to be red? So this is a halachic question, because when a woman has her period, so then we know that she has to wait until her period ends, and then she waits 7 days to show she's clean, and then she can go to mikveh, and then the couple can be together again. So Chazal described all the different colors that a woman might see, because a woman that has the uterus gives out a secretion that has all kinds of colors. Sometimes it can be white and see-through, and sometimes it can be yellow, and sometimes it can be brown. So when is it called blood? So our starting point is blood has to be red. Shenemal, the pasuk says, Vayehu Moav mineged et amayim adumim kedam. He answered him, there's a verse. It says that the Edomites looked at the waters, and the waters looked red as blood. He said, that's your source, that whenever, even though we have five colors, which we say are considered blood, but the idea is, we're saying, let's say comes out black. So we're saying, it's a red that went bad. When you're seeing it, it turned into a bad color, but technically black is also red. So he asked him, what's the source that red is the baseline? How do we know that blood, because if a person cuts themselves, the color of the blood on a, you know, if you put a gauze pad and you look at the blood, it's not going to be the same color as the color coming out of a womb. when a woman has her cycle, it's a different color. The oxidation of the blood is very different, the blood coming out of the womb. So what color is our baseline? He said red. How do I know red? From that verse. By the way, red in Tanakh is not the same red as our red. Let's take an example. Most of the wines you see, if you squeeze out grapes, comes out purple, right? So, yeah, most grapes will make a purple color. And the Pasuk says, Al tere yain ki yit adam. Wine turns reddish. Is the wine reddish? Oh, others will say it's people's eyes that turn reddish when they drink too much wine. But that's what it's talking about. Okay. But the para aduma, the red heifer, is she red or is she brown or is she something in between? Red in Chazal has to be defined. Minayin lemila shebaoto makom. How do you know that a circumcision has to be done in the place we do it? Ne'emar kan olatom, ne'emar la'alan olatom, la'alan dvar she'osepri, avkan dvar she'osepri. Torah just says, cut off a piece of skin that's called the foreskin. How do you know which piece of skin is called the foreskin? So he said, when the Torah describes a tree, that the first 3 years you can't eat the tree, Torah says, treat the first 3 years as orla. Afterwards you eat the fruit. So you see, the Torah speaks about procreation, the bearing of fruits. That's what's called orla. So over here also, when the Torah says cut off an arla, it's talking about the part of the body that's involved in procreation. That's his answer. You see, the word arla pertains to fruits. Well, the word arla also pertains to man's fruitfulness. He says, yeah, but the Torah also speaks about the heart having a foreskin. The Torah says, circumcise your heart's foreskin. So how do you know you're not supposed to do something to the heart? Amos, no, maybe the ear. Because the Torah also says, Inei ola oznam. It says people's ears were as though they were covered with a foreskin. So maybe when the Torah calls the ear, it says the ear has an arla. The ear is as though it's covered up. So you see, the Torah uses the word arla about the ear. Maybe we should cut off the edge of a person's ear. He answered him, Danin olato tamam, olato tamam, ven danin olato tamam, meola sheina tamam. The Torah says, orlato. Uvayom ha-shemini yimol besar orlato. The word orlato, the full version of the word, only appears with regard to the fruit of a tree. You have the word orla, you have the word orlat. You don't have orlato. The word orlato, the way it's written about the foreskin, is only written about fruits. So that indicates it's the fruit-bearing part of the male body. So Rav asked him, okay, you've asked me all these questions. What's your name? So he answers him, Karna. That's my name. So he said, okay, you're asking me all these questions. Your name is Karna. Karna means a horn. You should have a horn go into your eyes. He felt it was disrespectful that he went on asking him all these questions. So poor Karna, he just got a curse from the big rabbi. So Shmuel brought him into the house. Ochle nama de sari vekasa de halsena veashke yeshicha. So Shmuel gave him to eat barley bread, and he gave him to drink beer, and he didn't show him where the bathroom was. So he gave him food that would cause him to have diarrhea, and he didn't show him the bathroom. Why? Because Shmuel was a doctor. And when he walked into Shmuel's house, Shmuel can see that he had a problem with constipation. Shmuel, we see in many places, was a brilliant doctor. He cured Rebbe. And he said this is his cure. His cure is that he will feel like he has diarrhea, and then he's going to be forced to hold himself in. And then, after a little bit of time, when he'll finally relieve himself, he'll be cured. So Rav understood someone played a trick on him. So Rav said, Omar, Layit Rav Omar. Rav cursed and said, Mandem Tzaran, who's making me suffer like this? Lolukme Leibni, he shouldn't be able to establish children after him. V'chein hava, and Rav's curse came true. Rav's curse came true. So Shmuel had good intentions, but he didn't explain it to Rav. And even though Shmuel actually cured Rav, but Rav wasn't so happy about it, and so he took Shmuel ended up paying for it. So before we continue, we learn a lot of interesting things from this story. One of the rules we learn is don't upset a big rabbi. You don't want them to get upset at you. Even though Shmuel was doing Rav a favor, I guess he should have explained to him in advance. You know, I see you walked into my house. This is what I see. It says Shmuel could look at the waters and tell you which waters would cure which ailment. Shmuel would come to Rebbe. He saw one time Rebbe had an eye infection. He said, here's the cure. So Rebbe said, no, my eye is hurting too much. I can't do that. So he said, okay, put it in this encasing and put it inside your pillowcase. It'll seep through the pillowcase. It'll cure you. He said, no, that hurts too much. He said, okay, I'll make it potent enough. You put it under the pillow. You go to sleep at night, and it'll seep all the way through the pillow to the top and cure your eyes. And that's what happened. We have different advice from Shmuel. Shmuel was a really extraordinary doctor. He could diagnose just seeing people. He could understand what their ailment was. There's a doctor like that today. I don't know about his cures, but I can tell you about his diagnoses. There's a doctor who was standing on Simchas Torah, playing with the kids, you know, lifting the kids as they dance. He lifts one kid and he calls the father and he says, take your kid right now to the hospital. Goodbye. Go right now, have them x-ray his stomach. He, as he lifted the kid, he gauged his weight and he said, the kid has a tumor in his stomach. He shouldn't be this weight. Just lifting the kid, he was able to tell the parents, you go right now, x-ray your son. And there are many stories about this doctor. He's a conventional doctor. Conventional doctor, but he's very smart, very with it. We had once, one of our kids had an issue that they sent us up and up and up till the top specialist in the country in this issue. And he met the kid and he said, I can't argue with specialists, but I think it's something totally different. And he was right. It took us 6 months to find out that he was right. But he was right. He was right. It was really a non-issue. So there are really, really good doctors in this world. Coming back to Shmuel. So Shmuel, unfortunately, Shmuel got the brunt of it. He was helping Rav, but we learn in Chazal that curses do have potential for coming true, especially from exceptional people. Sha'ol Baitusi Echad et Rabbi Yoshua Hagarsi. There was a Baitusi, we know the Baitusis, they went against the tradition of Chazal. So there was a Baitusi who asked Rabbi Yoshua Hagarsi. He asked him the following, Minayin shen kotvin tefillin al gabei o be'mat me'a. How do you know I can't write tefillin, phylacteries, on the hide of a non-kosher animal? D'chtiv l'man tiyatot shem b'ficha. So he answered him the same answer that Rav had answered. The Torah says the words of Torah should be in your mouth. We understand from that, midavar hamutar b'ficha, that you have to use things that are edible. Ela me'atan l'gabei o nevelot etrefot al yikatvu, what Tzvi asked earlier tonight. So then maybe we should shecht the animal. How come we use hides of kosher animals? We use cow hides, but we don't necessarily use hides of animals that were edible, that had a shechita, that were slaughtered in the kosher way. He said, I'll tell you what's it similar to. There were two people that the king said they deserved the death penalty. One was killed by the king, one was killed by the chief executioner. Who do you think is greater? I would say that the one who was killed by the king, he's on a higher level. So that's what he didn't want to explain to the Baitusi. Because the Baitusim used to use our Torah and try to use it against us. They wouldn't accept our tradition. So he tried to answer him without going into tradition. So what does the Baitusi answer him? He says, "Elameata yachlu." He says, if that's the logic, then why don't we eat animals that just died naturally? God killed them. That should be better than Shechita. Why do you insist on Shechita? Amalekalus. So he said, you know, the Torah says, you guys believe in the Torah. Torah says, don't eat an animal that died unless you slaughtered it. Lo tochelu kol nevela. Don't eat an animal that died a natural death or death other than by shechita. So the Baitusi had to agree. He said, kalus, which is a way of saying, yeah, good answer. So here we have an example of how the rabbis would sometimes give answers to people who were not learned in Torah to make them feel good with the Torah, even though the answer isn't the right answer. It's an answer that he could work with. Okay, that makes sense to me, fine. Tani Rav Yehuda bar Chaviva. Now they're going to tell us interesting things about nature. Etrog. What's an etrog? We know what that is. A citron. Tznon. What's a tznon? So in modern Hebrew we say it's a radish. I don't know what it was in the days of Chazal. Vebeitza. And an egg. Ilmalei kelipatan achitzona. If they didn't have their outer... it's not really shell. With the case of the egg, the idea is the... what do you call the white of an egg? Huh? Albumin. Okay. If you didn't have the albumin, so einam yotzim ibnei me'ayim le'olam, you would never be able to get them out of your stomach. They would just cause constipation and block up the stomach. So the outer part of the etrog and the tznon makes me wonder, you know, with my kids, there are those that like the white and those that like the yellow, and they do half-half. You know, according to the Gemara, it's not a good idea. Our digestive system needs the white in order to digest the yellow. This is interesting. Someone told me that this happened for the first time this week. No one ever drowned in the Sodomite Sea, which we assume is the Yam HaMelech, because everything floats in the Yam HaMelech. I heard this week someone drowned in the Yam HaMelech. Is that true? I don't know if it's true. That's what someone told me. I don't know how you could drown. I'm saying the water keeps you afloat. It can be painful, but I don't know. Amar Rav Yosef, hafucha sedom, vafucha milei gavra hu delo tava, keshura tava. Sedom was upside down, so the way it works, the sea of Sedom is also upside down. If you put a beam inside the Yam HaMelech, it'll sink. It's only if you put a human being that he floats. He says everything's upside down there. Abaye said to him, no, you got it backwards. He says, believe me, that beams will float in the Sea of Sodom. I don't know what happens in the Yam HaMelech. Can things stay afloat? Can ships go in the Yam HaMelech? What? I have no idea. I don't know. Do things stay afloat? I mean, they were out in Babylon. So, I don't know. You have an argument here about whether things would stay afloat in the Yam HaMelech.
Which makes sense, because the buoyancy would probably push them out further than the balancing point.
Ah, you're saying in that sense.
And then the ship would come out and then tip probably on its side.
Interesting. But he's talking about a beam. He's not talking about a ship. I don't know. I don't know, also we have a rule that the rabbis didn't argue about facts, meaning facts they would verify. So the question is over here, why didn't they just check it out? They must be talking about something else. Because the rule is that in Talmud they don't argue about facts. Anytime you see an argument about facts, that means you have to check out what else is going on here. There's a rule that Nachmanides in his commentary on Elu Trefos, a chapter in Tractate Chulin, he writes from the Jerusalem Talmud over there, he says the rabbis had a principle. They wouldn't argue about fact. Things that are factual, do your experimentation and come up with the answer. So I'm not sure what the discussion really revolved around over here. The way it's written certainly sounds like it's an argument about facts. But it could be also, I don't know. Because the way the quotes worked is Rav Dini emigrated from Israel to Babylon and said no one ever drowned in the Sea of Sodom, in the Yam HaMelech. And then Rav Yosef, who was Sagi Nahor, he was blind, so he deduced, he said, Sodom is the opposite of everywhere else. because Sodom and everywhere else, human beings can drown and wood doesn't sink. And in Sodom, it's the opposite. To which his own disciple, Abaye, tells him, no, it's not true. If humans don't sink in that sea, then beams also don't sink in that sea. That's Abaye's answer. So I'm not sure why Rav Yosef thought, was it his own assumption? Rav Yosef, living in Babylon, thought to say that, and then they told him, no, that's not the way it works. I'm not sure. It doesn't sound that way, because then the Talmud could have just left Rav Yosef's comment out. If it was a mistake, if it was just that, like the simple reading of the Talmud's text, the rabbi should have just edited it out. What's the point in writing it? So I'm not sure. I'm not sure how we understand this piece. Okay. Shalach le Rabbi Yanai le Marukva. Rabbi Yanai was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yochanan, so he was a very early generation Amora. He sent word to Marukva, and he asked him the following. He said, Lishdor lan mar, please send us Mehanach Kilorin, Demar Shmuel. Master Shmuel, he prepared different bombs, and we want you to send us the bombs that Rabbi Shmuel the doctor, prepared. Shalach lei Shaduri Meshadar Nalach, Delotei Matzar Ainana. He said, you asked me to send it, I'll send it. I don't want you to think I'm stingy. Elahachi Amar Shmuel. But I'll also tell you what Shmuel taught us. Shmuel was the top doctor, and he told us that if you want to know what the good cures are, then it goes like this. Tova tipat zonen shacharit. The best thing in the morning. The best thing in the morning. You want a balm for your eyes. The best thing in the morning is to drip a little bit cold water into your eyes.
What do you mean by bomb for your eyes?
I guess he had eye trouble, so he wanted something that would calm his eyes. So he said to him, I'll send it to you. Shmuel prepared these bandages that people could place on their eyes to calm them down. So he said, I'll send it. I don't want you to think I'm just being stingy, but I'll give you his advice. He said, you want your eyes to be healthy? The first thing you should know is it's good to wash them, to put in a little bit of cold water at night. You want to know what's healthy for your hands and feet? Rechitzat yadayim v'raglayim b'chamin arvit. Washing your hands and feet with warm water at night. That's also beneficial to your eyesight. Mikol kiluin shebalam, and they're better than any bombs that you'll find in the world. He said that's the healthiest thing. We have a rule when it comes to the medicine of the Talmud that we don't use it. Our rule is that we don't know how to understand it and we don't know how to apply it. And our diets have changed, and our lifestyle has changed, and our water has changed. Everything in our lives has changed. So the rule for the past almost two millennium is that we don't use the cures of the Talmud. We're not sure how to apply them, so we don't do them. But it's interesting to read. Tanya Namiyachi. Not because of the Gemara. And if I do it, it's not because of the Gemara. I try to do what modern medicine recommends. I get a flu shot. I do the things that the doctors of today recommend. Tanya Namiyachi Amar Rav Muna Mishum Rav Yehuda. We have the following quote: Tovati patzonen shachit v'chitzat yadayim v'raglayim arvit mikol kishurin shebaolam. The best thing you could do for yourself is to put a little cold water in your eyes in the morning and wash your hands and feet with warm water at night. Huaya omer yad lain tikatzetz. And we're going to conclude with this quote. This quote is actually quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that if a person touches his eyes in the morning before he washed them, so then he'd be better off cutting off that hand, because he's harming his eyes. It'll ultimately cause him blindness. Touching the eyes before Nitilat Yadayim in the morning, the Gemara says, is something that can ultimately cause them to be blinded. Yad Lachotim, same thing if a person touches his nose, the opening of his nose, also Tikatzetz. Yad Lepe, if he touches his mouth, same thing. First thing you should do in the morning is wash your hands, because all the openings of the body, the Talmud says, this thing called Ruach Ra, a bad spirit, whether that means disease or something else, they can all enter through the openings of the body, the Talmud says. So you gotta make sure to wash your hands when you wake up in the morning, the way we do, alternate three times on each hand, before we touch the eye, the nose, the mouth, the ear, yad leozen tikatzetz, yad lechasuda tikatzetz. I don't know what part of the body is the chasuda. They give us a puls eder. What's that? I don't know what that is in German. Yad, huh? Puls adar, eder. Puls adar. Okay. Yad le'amati katzetz. The same is true if a person touches the opening through which he relieves himself, both if it's where one urinates, or when yad le'pita bati katzetz, or the other opening, yad le'gigiti katzetz. The Talmud says it's a bad idea to touch a barrel of wine or beer when you woke up in the morning without washing nagel vaser with your hands. And we understand this to mean any food shouldn't be touched when you wake up in the morning before you wash your hands three times alternating. Yad misama, the hand can cause one to go blind. Yad machreshet, it could cause one to go deaf. Deaf, yad mala polypus, it could cause the illness called polypus, through which people have a bad smell in their mouth and their nose. So that's the Gemara till here. And here the Gemara tells us, that this spirit that's on a person's hands when he wakes up in the morning doesn't leave till you wash your hands three times. And the Gemara doesn't say to alternate. And really, there are different opinions among the Kabbalists. The opinion that's accepted is what we do today. That's become accepted for the last few centuries, that you must alternate. That's what it means. But the Gemara says three times on each hand. That's what the Gemara says. Okay.
Do we still practice that today? We